Monk once pointed out to me that the most of the Buddhist suttas, only very, very short teachings, the Buddha would teach for maybe just a few minutes at a time, and then that was it. And that sometimes it's the most powerful thing you can do is just say a few words in a few minutes. Of course, when that same monk came to give himself to give a Dhamma talk, all the monks complained because he went on for hours without stopping. But anyway, that's human nature. So the Dhamma itself is something which is actually very simple and very pure. If you hold on, get attached to things, then you suffer. If you let go of them, you're happy, you're free. And when it comes right down to it, if you leave aside all of the stuff, then there's not much more to it than that. Everything else is details. Which reminds me of the famous story that was told in the Hebrew tradition about the famous teacher Rabbi Hillel, who predated Jesus by a century or so, and they a famous teacher of the time, and some people came up to him and said to him, according to the legend, we want you to recite the whole of the Torah, the ancient scriptures and teachings, while standing on one foot. So immediately he hops up on one foot and says, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. That's the whole of the Torah. Everything else is just commentary. Go and study it. So that's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah. So the Buddha said that he only teaches two things, suffering and the ending of suffering. So why do we fill up so many books with those two things? Suffering, well, you've got to do something with this time, you know. You can't just keep on saying suffering, 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 end of suffering, end of suffering, end of suffering. So those principles, they are very simple, and it's something we have to keep coming back to and keep reminding ourselves. So much of what we do in our contemporary Buddhist practice is actually leaving things out, cutting through things, renouncing things, letting things go. And not only do we, you know, we have to let go of bad acts, you know, it's the first stage of the path, let go of the things of violations of our sila, let go of those things which are harmful and deceitful and so on. And so we cut them out of our lives. And so our lives become simplified to that extent. And when we've undertaken the sila, then we keep on practicing, we purify our livelihood. And we try to make our life as content as possible. And as with the teachings on the silas from the gradual training that we've been studying, there's all these kind of things that we can leave out of our lives. And so the kind of the extra precepts that you find in the 8 precepts, the 10 precepts and so on, and especially in the silas of the Digha Nikaya, you know, these are things which lead to contentment and lead to simplicity and letting go of luxurious things, letting go of worrying about having luxurious furnishings and shoes decorated with peacock's feathers and all of the other exciting and wonderful things. So of course we can laugh about it because it's all so stupid, isn't it? It's all so silly, but the reality is it fills so many people's lives, powers our economy. There are all shopping malls full of stuff which you can get to make your life more complicated. So when we take up Buddhist practice, we're diametrically opposed to that. We let go of as many things as possible. And we just keep on letting go, keep on letting go, keep on letting go. To whatever's reasonably possible. And it's interesting that these things are what seems reasonable is of course dependent on the material culture at the time, and it's not independent from that. For example, we look back on the Buddha's day and we think, wow, you know, they were so content to just have the robes and the bowl. But actually, robes and bowl Say, for example, if you're from a hunter-gatherer society, then having woven cloth robes and an iron bowl is this technology which is beyond your imagination. It's like that's like a, you know, that's the difference between an iron bowl and a hunter-gatherer technology is the same as the difference between the technology in the Buddha's time and having a laptop and a mobile phone. There's such a huge gap there. There's these things are dependent on environment, dependent on context, and there's no coincidence that when we're studying these things, so often we're both learning about the context but also being reminded of how many things we don't know about that context. For example, reading the Khandaka this week about the wearing of shoes and all the different regulations about that, and it reminds us, well, actually we don't really know what people had on their feet in those days. So we take from these the principles of simplicity and contentment and so on. And these things are dependent on time and place and individual and so on. And so we have to try to reflect in ourselves and then always see how much we can leave behind, how much we can do without. So that's always a good practice to do, is to go back to your kuti and just think, how many things do I not need? And then just take all those things that you think you might not need and then just get rid of them. Give them back to the stores or whatever. Make your life as simple as possible. So instead of thinking maybe it'll be useful, you think maybe it won't be useful. Instead of thinking maybe it'll be handy, you think, well, maybe it'll be a burden. And so if you cut back too much, that's okay, then you learn that lesson. And then you can have something extra once you know how little you actually need. So sometimes in monastic life you find, certainly among the monks, I'm not sure whether this is so much the case among the nuns as well, but certainly among the monks you find that there's kind of a almost like an ascetic competition to see how harsh you can be, you know, just eat few mouthfuls of food a day, or one lump of sticky rice every day, or something like that, or you know, all the different kinds of ascetic practices. So those things are always, I always remember that regarding undertaking ascetic practices according to the Visuddhimagga, is that it says that you should always ask the teacher before undertaking ascetic practices. See whether they think it's a good idea. And I always remember the story of the Desert Fathers and some of the early Christian ascetics, and one of the young monks came and said, I just want to eat one loaf of bread every second day, and I wanted to undertake this as a practice. And the teacher said, well, I'd be happier if you ate half a loaf of bread every day. So that, to me, that's a very beautiful teaching about the nature of contentment. Just enough every day. And this is another aspect of contentment which perhaps we don't pay enough attention to, and that's like contentment with the teachings, contentment with the place, contentment with the practice, contentment with what we're doing, contentment with our own state of mind, contentment with our progress in meditation. Contentment with what we've learnt. Contentment with the opportunities that we have to grow. Because we all have so very, very much. We all have such a wonderful opportunity to practice. We all have so many things to be grateful for. And by staying here, by living here at Santi Monastery, and by learning what's to be learned, by practicing the practices, the keeping the Vinaya, all of those things which are sustaining all of you in your practice, they're not easy to find in this world. Not easy at all. Not easy to set up, not easy to create, not easy to sustain. And so when things are imperfect, then we're content with that as well. It doesn't mean we're lazy, we're complacent. It just means that we do what we can. So in Buddhism, over the last 2,500 years, has developed and grown and has been an extraordinary cultural phenomenon of you know, infinite complexity and depth and richness. And if we want to inquire and study into different aspects of that, we can spend our life looking at the forms that Buddhism takes at different times and places. And there's much to be learnt from that study. But there's also much to be learnt from cutting away, leaving aside, putting aside all of those things that are not so essential. Not because they're bad, not because there's anything wrong with them, just what are actually those things that are most important for us. So to have a sense of contentment with the teachings that we've got, that we've received from Siddhartha, the Buddha. And you know, in so many times in Buddhism that people look forward to the coming of Maitreya Buddha. Oh, it'll be so wonderful when Maitreya comes and to be able to see him and so on, be able to practice with him. And what do you expect? What's Maitreya going to give you? What is there that's wrong with the teachings that we have now? What's wrong with the practices? What's wrong with the Eightfold Path? What's wrong with the Four Noble Truths? What's Maitreya got that we haven't got already? And the answer, of course, is nothing at all. There's nothing at all that we need to practice and to realize Nibbana that we don't have. We have everything we need. So this is another aspect of contentment, is just to be content with the teachings and content just to be doing what we're doing. To be content day by day and to do the chores that we do. To be content with the food. To be content with the kuti, the dwelling place. To be content with our friends here. To be content with the teacher and the teachings. And then I was spent a little bit of time with Bhante Kirpa Gotamyanananda in India, and he has a very lovely sangha of young Sri Lankan monks. And you know, he's got this kind of very charming persona, and he said, you know, he said he wants them to look at him as like a Kalyanamitta, as a spiritual friend. You know, not as a sort of infallible guru or something like that, who's kind of but just like a Kalyanamitta. And that's, I think it's a very beautiful way to look at it and look at each other as we're staying here. And we're all Kalyanamitta. We all make it possible together with the connections that we make here, with the work we do together, listening to each other, sharing, giving, helping. That's what makes this a community. That's what gives us strength. And so we can laugh together, we can talk together, we can work together, and we share that common goal and that common aspiration to let go of suffering, to overcome the shadows and the darkness in our heart, to leave behind all of those things that we regret in the past, to find a freedom from being dominated, being overwhelmed by greed, being overwhelmed by hatred, being overwhelmed by delusion, and find a freedom from those things. It's the only freedom that counts at the end of the day. Can we be free from greed, hatred and delusion? Can we let go of those things? Everything else just follows from that. The whole fabric of suffering and happiness, being and non-being and everything, it just unravels from that point. All the worldly dichotomies, the dualisms, the conflicts, the paradoxes, the tensions, the all of these things just unravel. If we can unlock the greed, hatred, delusion in our hearts and let go of that, easier said than done. And it's one of the reasons it's very not an easy thing to be a teacher of the Dhamma. And you know, I feel like a great hypocrite to sit here and tell you get rid of greed, hatred and delusion, when I'm full of greed, hatred and delusion. And you know, these teachings that we had in the Samanyapala Sutta, we saw in the Sanskrit version of it, where the person was said, well, I'll investigate the teacher first to see whether they have greed, hatred and delusion before I can follow them. Oh, well. Bye bye, you can all walk out again. So that's the end of that. So anyway, that's a question of faith. Yeah, I have faith that the Buddha was free of greed, hatred and delusion, so I try to practice his teachings and pass on his teachings. But not Sujato's Dhamma. Don't follow Sujato's Dhamma. So we do what we can to help and support each other, to make our practice a little bit easier, and be like a Dhamma family, you know, a circle of Dhamma friends, and respecting each other and helping each other when we need to. And this is the right way to be living as a Sangha together. So whatever, wherever we are in practice, there's always something more. There's always something to be developed, something to be abandoned. So we can always go deeper in our meditation. We can always go further in our understanding of the Dhamma. But at the end of the day, it just comes back to these very, very simple things. Are we suffering or are we not? Do we have greed, hatred and delusion or do we not? And if we have it, how do we let go of it? How do we let go of greed, hatred and delusion? So of course this is why we have all of the different factors and aspects of the path. Because greed, hatred and delusion are complex things. They manifest in many ways. And so our practice reflects all those different ways. And practicing generosity helps to overcome certain kinds of defilements. Practicing sila, keeping precepts, helps to overcome certain other kinds of defilements. Practicing our right speech together helps to overcome certain kinds of defilements. Studying suttas, developing our right view, helps to overcome certain kinds of defilements. And so on and so on. And of course meditation is the way of overcoming the most subtle and most tenacious of the defilements. But meditation doesn't work by itself. It works together with all of these other factors. So if we have some appreciation of this and some faith in the training, then we'll be have that contentment to just keep on going. Keep on going, little bit by little bit. And have that patience. And if just, even if we just get a little bit of wisdom, then that's good. If we're able to let go of something very small, then that's good. So we'll be content with that progress. And we keep on building it and keep on doing it persistently again and again. And so just to remember that it all comes back to these very simple teachings, the suffering and the ending of suffering. And even though we explore more widely and look at a lot of interesting ideas and explore different concepts and ways of looking at things and so on, at the end of the day, that's what it comes back to, suffering and the ending of suffering. So it's okay to look at all of these different perspectives and different ways of doing things, but just keep coming back to that. There's suffering and there's the ending of suffering. And then we don't lose our basis, we don't lose our center pole. So it's just a few words for you this evening on the topic of contentment. So I offer this to you for your reflection, and I'd like to invite if there's any comments or questions.
Sutta Pipanno, Bhagavato. Sangam.